C2SP. Number 17B.
In the next subtone of life, she goes on with that question of how to wed Christianity with science and says, or I said as an epitome, the way of salvation in Christianity is not humanly impelled, but effected by God. Or I could have put it more positively and say the way of salvation in Christian science is divinely impelled, and not humanly, because it says this is not a human act. It wasn't so that one day somehow out of a philosophical contemplation, scientists of today said, well, science must be more humanistic, science and religion actually should be one. It was forced upon us, that wedding, because we could see that science has brought us to the abyss, especially through the atom bomb. People were waking up and were considering that actually science is working against men and not for men. Up to that point, we always said, well, it's in the service of men. It brings to men more comfort. It brings to men higher inventions that are helpful to men. And suddenly we began to see, can you see that suddenly an error destroys itself? You had a long, many century long technology that always brought to men higher comfort and more help and so on through the technology, up to a point, more and more up to the point there with the atom bomb. Then one suddenly began to see it has reached a point where one can see that it is self-destructive, that it actually is not helping men, but that actually, when you see through it, it is actually destroying men. And these are the turning points of which I was speaking when I did Truth as Life. Here it is Love as Life that we come to, which shows really that the unexpected can happen. Nobody would ever have expected, even during the war, that really with a new technical invention like the atom bomb, that suddenly the whole philosophical idea of what science should be and must be would be suddenly brought up as a necessity. It had to come. It wasn't just a volition of mankind that said, well, shouldn't we now sometimes, after all those many hundreds of years, consider science a bit differently? No, it was forced on us. It was forced on us with a big bang. And that is what can happen in the future over and over. We just have not enough spiritual insight and not enough imagination usually to see that such a turning point can come any day, can come right today, this afternoon, can come tomorrow, can come in 10 years, that something happens which really shakes up our mentality out of our sleep, so that the world is still asleep, she said at the beginning, well, that it wakes us out of that sleep and suddenly begin to realize that which seems to be matter, always beautiful but always erroneous, is true. Here she speaks about that way of life now, that the way through which immortality and life are learned, how the way through which it is learned, is not ecclesiastical. That's what the church hoped that it will be, that through the church we will see the purpose of life. But it is Christian. It is not human. We always thought that humanity and the humanism of the world would help to support men so that man would find his way of life. It didn't. All the humanistic periods didn't really last very long. They didn't really achieve very much because the way is not human but divine. Then it is not physical. Then we thought, well, technology will do it. And the whole Marxism was really built up on that material historical concept that really only the matter is the basis for a better age, for a better humanity, and that humanity will be better if the material is managed better. So it didn't work either. So it is not physical, but metaphysical. It is, fourthly, not material, but scientifically spiritual. So we have four different means which have been tried out in the past. The way has been tried out, the way through which immortality and life are learned. That is the purpose. We would like to learn immortality and life. You see again the identities of being. And so one was using up to now four different means. First, the ecclesiastical one instead of the Christian one. One was using the human one instead of the divine method. One was using the physical one instead of the metaphysical one. And one was using the material one instead of the scientifically spiritual. So it climaxes really today in using the scientifically spiritual method. Also, when we read this sentence again, you can see that somehow they, in a way, hint to the first four chapters. That through the first four chapters, always the positive sense of those four were accentuated, so that the way to immortality in life are learned is not ecclesiastical, but Christian. That was a prayer. That it was prayer that said, don't have an ecclesiastical, theological prayer. It must be a Christian prayer. It must be a prayer of the Spirit of the Christ within you. Then came Atonement and Eucharist. We said, look here, even the human is not working, it must be divine, because the divine must overcome the human at every point. So the true method was the divine. Then we had a marriage which was showing that the physical propagation was not really leading anywhere, that physical propagation is just a transitional state, but that it must be metaphysical. And for the first time in the chapter on marriage, we had the term metaphysical, that life must be regarded more metaphysically. And finally, we come now to the fourth chapter, which said, look here, the world is not material, the world is spiritual, and that spiritual is scientific. It's not materially scientific, it's spiritually scientific. So we could see somehow here towards the end of the world chapters that here she depicts again the way. We said the textbook is a way of life. It shows the way of life. It shows where we start out of our way of life, which steps we have to take on that way, and where that way leads to. And here it seems as if Mrs. Eddy will quickly glance back to the first four chapters and show, look here, this is the way. And it is a way that naturally combines the scientific aspect with the spiritual aspect, which up to now, naturally, scientists never did. They were hard-boiled materialists. And now it is not materially, but scientifically spiritual. Human philosophy, ethics, and superstition afford no demonstrable divine principle. This is another point we have to see, that we can see that actually only that which has a divine principle can really be of any help to us, by which mortals can escape from sin. That all the other humanistic lines of thinking, like philosophy, ethics, and superstition, that they actually never found the true solution, that they never could really lead mortals out of sin and so as to escape from sin. Yet, to escape from sin is what the Bible demands. This is actually the pith of the religious teaching, to get rid of sin. Sin here is not a moral sin. Sin is not to accept God as the one and only Spirit. To miss that mark and have something besides God, Spirit, is sin. So that we have to escape from sin. Perhaps you could have said here also, so as to escape from dualism. Yet, work out your own salvation. Now we have the individuality. It says you, each individual, can work it out. We don't have to see that the president of a nation has to work it out for the nation, that the Pope has to work it out for a whole religion, that there is just one person that is competent enough to work it out for everybody. And if he doesn't do it, the others can't do it. So here she appeals to the individual and says, well, each individual is one with God. Jeremiah has said, well, I put the law of God into the heart of everyone, so that no one has to ask his neighbor, what is God? Everybody knows what is God. Everybody can save himself individually. So work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, which means against fear and trembling, as you know, the right translation. Says the apostle, and he straightway adds, for it is God. Now we come to life, the life impulsion that really brings out that individuality. For it is God which works in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Giving a sense that God is the impelling power for going the right way. And that is something that we should see too, that it is not just something that we can make up our minds and say, okay, I make up my mind, I want to work out my own salvation. And then turn to the husband and say, why don't you do it too? We cannot force anybody, because if God can't do it, we can't do it either. So let's not interfere with God's plan, who has a plan for each individual, an individual way of salvation, and that everybody has its own Christ, and that individual Christ, he always knows the time, the way, the means, the channels, how to save the individual. So we can rely on that here. But it says now here to each individual, it's up to you if you want to combine Christianity with science and see that unity and to work it out. And in working it out, that unity, you work out your own salvation. Then we come to the point of truth. The epitome here reads that Christian Science opens with the key of truth, the door of human understanding. What was missing naturally all through the centuries or through the thousand years of human investigation and human research, of human philosophy and ethics, always trying their best and always being able to see here and there an isolated fact that is eternally true. What was missing was naturally to the key that would unite really science with religion. That was always missing. It was missing that underlying science is the same structure as underlying religion. If we see that they have underlying the same structure, then naturally we unite really Christianity and science. So it isn't so that we try to go to the scientists in the world, the physical scientists in the world. Come on, you should also go to church. You also should believe in God. You should also have a religious sentiment and a religious attitude. Come on, you have to unite. This is not the way to do it. nor the other way around, that we go to the religiously people and say to them, look here, you must unite with science, you must be thinking more scientifically, because they wouldn't know how to do it. They wouldn't know how to do it. First of all, something new had to be discovered that has never been discovered before, and that is the underlying system of being. That system which underlies being, capital B. If we find out that, then we don't find out just another religion, we find out another science, we find out both, that underlying system is a system that has a surface structure as religion or as science which unites them, because they have a common denominator in it. So we may not be surprised to see that in from the fields of science and from the fields of religion, we can arrive at the same fundamental categories of being as we have here in Christian Science. So Christian Science is the combination of Christian and science, of religion and science. In that very term we have that unity. And when we see now that Christian Science has a structure of categories, the categories, the three great structure, categories of being, the seven and the four and the four, uniting in a system, then we begin to realize that then also our scientific thought, our scientific reasoning must be cultured in this structure, in these categories, so that then science and our inward feeling or inner sentiment has the same structure, that there is a congruency between the structure of being and the structure of consciousness. That's the key called Christian Science. And that has, Truth has furnished the key to the kingdom. She says here at Truth, has furnished the key to the kingdom. We know through Revelation how Jesus prophesied and said that key will come, the Comforter will come, I will send the Comforter. How in Revelation, John, the Revelator has seen that the book will be opened by the Christ idea, that it will not always be a closed book, that the little book is open and that it does contain divine science, absolute Christian science and Christian science. So that is the key to the kingdom. And with this key, Christian Science has opened the door of the human understanding, namely to science. None may pick the lock nor enter by some other door. That's a very strong statement on one line. It says there is no other way. So we have a sense that Christian Science is exclusive, so that we can't say, well, every religion is right, always lead to Rome, and things like that. Here she makes a clear statement, it's only through Christian Science. We cannot enter through another door. There is no other key to being than Christian Science. Because Christian Science is not from Mrs. Eddy. Christian Science is from God. And Mrs. Eddy was just a clear transparency for it, a clear window pane through which really Christian Science could shine through. So we always have to see, really, that it was quite a job for Mrs. Eddy to be transparent so as to let, really, God speak through her. And not that she was so good that she could invent or construct Christian Science. That's not the case. The ordinary teachings are material and not spiritual. That distinguishes from Christian Science. So Christian Science teaches only that which is spiritual and divine and not human. And not human. And not human. It is divine. So any attempt to try to, through good humanism, to be a better Christian scientist He is going against Christian Science. He's going against the textbook. And so we should drop that sense that we feel that through good humanity we reach the divine. We do not. Only the divine is molding the human and molding the human until everything in the human that is erroneous disappeared and there is nothing human left, because then only the spiritual is being left. So Christian Science, further she says, is unerring and divine, and suddenly capitalizes divine. Whereas before she didn't capitalize divine, when she was speaking that it is not human but divine on page 98, line 32, you see there she said it's not human but divine. Here she has said Christian Science is spiritual and divine on line 15, and again it was just lowercase and not capitalized, and yet suddenly at the end of it she says Christian Science is unerring and divine and capitalizes divine. The human sense of things errs because it is human. Again, can you see Christian Science is not humanism? It's not humanism. Christian Science is divine and spiritual. Why on earth has she put that in a capital D? Well, I'm not competent enough to say it, to say a conclusive answer, but it seems here that she wants to say, look here, Christian Science is unerring. When is it unerring? It's only unerring when we go out from the capitalized terms. When we go out from the capitalized terms, then we have an unerring sense of things. But if we go out only from the capitalized terms, then we touch the 7,000-year period, which is divine science and not Christian Science. Then we have the calculus of the capitalized terms and not the calculus of ideas. And so what she wants to indicate to my present interpretation, which is now not conclusive because I can't prove it, I can only sense it through the development of the spiritual idea, that she wants to say, look here, I gave you Christian Science, and the textbook is a textbook of Christian Science. She never says it is a textbook of divine science. It's always a textbook of Christian Science. And so the main portion of the textbook in the text is all on the level of absolute Christian Science and Christian Science, taking for that really as its source divine science, but only indicating that the source is divine science, but constantly at once translated right down to absolute Christian Science or Christian Science. So in a way we can see that the textbook is the textbook for the 6,000-year period, but it isn't really the textbook for the 7,000-year period. But the 7,000-year period takes 1,000 years, not just a century. So that we can see that the bridge into the next 1,000-year period is very much still has the impress of divine, that the bridge over to the 7,000 years still has the impress of Christian Science as the beginning that would lead into divine science. But we can see that because she said, well, it takes centuries until Christian Science is understood, that we can see really that after it has been understood, what then? Then comes divine science. And it wouldn't be surprising if we already knew something about the textbook of divine science, namely the chart that we have in the level book, that that is already announcing divine science because it only deals with the capitalized terms. Then we come to the last subtone of love, Those individuals who adopt theosophy, spiritualism, or hypnotism, again, spiritualism comes up, which is just one form of theosophy, and we have seen just one form of hypnotism because it's all going on in our belief, may possess nature above some others who eschew their false beliefs. Therefore, my contest is not with the individual. So not with the theosophist, not with the spiritualist, not with the spiritist, not with the hypnotist, not with the person, not with the individual, but with the false system. That we do not agree with. I love mankind, I love man, the individual, and shall continue to labor and to endure. So this is the end of the third part, and I think what comes now is just a summary of those three great parts which says the calm, strong currents of true spirituality, the manifestation of which are health, purity, and self-immolation, must do what? They must deepen human experience. We saw there in the very first part that he said that the step is to gain spiritual life. Until the belief of material existence are seen to be bold imposition. So that's the uncovering that we have seen in the second part. We could see what is really reality and what is bold imposition. We always saw a phenomena can be the result of various sources, of various origins, and so we have to uncover what is the origin. And so that sin, disease, and death give everlasting place, now we have the everlasting place of the third part, spirit and love, to the demonstration of divine spirit, you have giving everlasting place, is love, to what? To spirit, to the divine spirit, and to God's perfect, a spiritual, perfect man. The climax of the third part. That's the chapter on spiritualism. And in a way you could see that perhaps the first part has a bit the tone of the word analyzes. Then the second part has a bit the touch of the Christ, because the Christ is that which uncovers and brings from undercover. And the third part has a real touch of Christianity, namely the working out, the demonstration, how to spiritualize so that we accept Christianity as science. All right, that was the chapter on Christian Science versus Spiritualism. Thank you for being here.